Now, the U.S. Supreme Court blocked lower court rulings on Friday on the abortion drug mifepristone. Those rulings aim to overturn the FDA's approval of the abortion medication, or at least more recent changes to FDA guidelines on the use of the drug. The Supreme Court's action means the drug remains widely available, but the case moves back to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals to issue a ruling in the future. It all comes from a federal lawsuit in Texas where an anti-abortion group argued that the FDA improperly approved the medication back in 2000. The drug remains mostly illegal here in Wisconsin, given the state's near-total abortion ban that came back into effect after last year's Dobbs ruling. We're learning more about what the court rulings mean and where the legal battle could go from here, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this series of court decisions or the laws involving mifepristone? How do you feel about the U.S. Supreme Court, at least for now, maintaining access to that medication? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. David S. Cohen is a professor at Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law. He's author of the book Obstacle Course, The Everyday Struggle to Get an Abortion in America. David, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we have this action from the U.S. Supreme Court. But it doesn't seem to end this story for now. What did we actually see out of the U.S. Supreme Court on this?
So this case is in the very early stages. And basically what the trial court had done was say, even though it's early on in this case, we haven't had a full trial, I'm going to put the FDA approval of this drug on hold. And that happened 2.5 weeks ago. He was going to put the approval on hold while the trial played out. And so it was, these were emergency appeals from that preliminary order. And the appeals court in Texas originally said, well, you can do that. You can put the approval on hold with respect to changes, new changes with the drug. And the Supreme Court just put his entire decision on hold last week, our Friday night. They basically said, let this case play out, but we're going to keep this drug available and on the market and approved while this case plays out. So it's all preliminary. We still have to have this case go through the whole works now.
How normal or unusual is it for a judge at that point in a lawsuit like this to say, looking ahead, we're gonna take this off the market for now while this trial goes on? How common is that?
Everything about this case is very unusual, starting with the initial, just the request from the plaintiffs here. No federal court has ever said the FDA has improperly approved a drug without the FDA saying we also made a mistake. This is unprecedented. This claim from the plaintiffs has never happened before with any drug. And so to have a judge say preliminarily, I agree with you, and I agree with you before we've had a full trial on this, that we're really in completely uncharted waters here.
One other unusual thing that I got to admit, I didn't quite get how unusual it was at the outset, even having talked about this on the air some, is the issue of standing. And this can feel a little obscure, but so we've got a group, it incorporated itself in Amarillo, Texas, where this judge is, of some healthcare providers, some other members. Their argument is they can sue on this. Correct me if I'm wrong. They could sue on this because there's the potential that in the future, if there's a side effect of someone taking mifepristone, one of their members as a healthcare provider might have to be involved with this. And that is the possible harm here. Can you talk about that standing argument?
Yeah, it's really strange one. Now, just the idea of standing for every case in federal court, the person coming into court has to be personally injured. And they have to ask for something from the court that would fix the injury or at least compensate them for the injury. I can't go into court because you've been injured. You have to go into court. And so these doctors, they're anti-abortion doctors, and they said that because there are complications for people taking this drug, that they are forced to treat people who had procedures that wanted to have an abortion and they don't like abortion, or they have to complete the abortion, or there's just their practice is harmed because they have to take time away from other patients. It's a really strange claim for a bunch of reasons. One, this drug has some of the most minimal complication rates of any drug on the market. It's safer than Tylenol, Viagra, penicillin. So you would really open up any drug to be challenged because there's no perfect drug out there. Every drug has complications for some people. So you'd basically be opening up challenges to any drug. And second, I mean, if you go into emergency medicine, if you go into urgent care, this is what you do. You treat people who have complications from life, from medical procedures, from pills, from decisions that you don't agree with. That's just part of your job. And so doing something that's a normal part of your job doesn't seem like it should be enough to get you into federal court to claim that I am injured in a special way that means I can bring this lawsuit. So the standing issue was one of the many issues that made this case seem so strange.
Talking to David Cohen, professor at Drexel University's Law School, looking at the Supreme Court's stay on a ruling that would have blocked the mifepristone medication from being used all over the United States. But it's still not done. You can join in with your thoughts or questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Chris is with us in Menominee. Chris, hi.
Hi, yeah, just listening to the conversation here. I think this was no surprise to see this passing of the buck, if you will, by the Supreme Court. They don't want to touch this with a 10-foot pole. I think that with the recent scrutiny of possible ethics violations of justices, this is the last thing they wanted to fall in their lap. Passing it back to the lower courts, forcing them to make a decision, just tries to kind of a delay tactic, if you will. Eventually, they're going to have to make a decision.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. David, Chris pointing us toward the future. Now, in the normal order of things, could the U.S. Supreme Court have weighed in on the merits of this case, or were they restricted to weighing in on this stay, which had been challenged?
For now, they were limited. I mean, look, they could have done anything. They could have decided we're going to take the case right now and, you know, decide it in the next couple months. But what they did was they said, we're going to let this play out in the lower appeals court. So we have that initial order from the trial judge, Judge Kaczmarek. Now it's going to be appealed to the Fifth Circuit, the appeals court that covers Texas. That's going to happen. The oral argument for that's going to happen in mid-May. They will take however long they take to issue a decision. And then if either party is unhappy with that decision, they can appeal it to the U.S. Supreme Court, which they likely will. Someone's going to be unhappy with that ruling. And the U.S. Supreme Court will probably jump in on this case, especially if the Fifth Circuit rules against the FDA and upsets the status quo. I think we will see the Supreme Court get involved. But then even then, it won't be for another year and a half that we would get a decision, probably next June. And so the caller, I think there might be something to what the caller is saying, that the Supreme Court might want to just say, we're taking a little break from the abortion cases. They just overruled Roe v. Wade last summer. And so maybe wait another year before they get into it again and issue another monumental decision around abortion. So I think the Supreme Court could, again, address this issue, but it will be a while.
Chris, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. And David, as I understand what the U.S. Supreme Court did, this stay now keeps mifepristone on the market, and it keeps it on the market even as the Court of Appeals hears it. Do I have that right?
Yes. So the Supreme Court said that mifepristone will remain approved through the Supreme Court's final decision in this case. Now, that could mean that the Supreme Court decides not to take the case. So, if, you know, the Supreme Court doesn't have to take every case that comes to it. So if the parties appeal whatever the Fifth Circuit does and the Supreme Court decides not to take the case, then the stay would end. Or the Supreme Court could take the case and the stay continues through their resolution of the case. So it really, you know, it really... the stay is in place. The status quo is in place until the Supreme Court next rules. Now, it's important to understand with what we're talking about here, just because mifepristone is on the market and approved doesn't mean it's available everywhere. Right. There are still 14 states, including Wisconsin, that has an abortion ban. And in those states, mifepristone would only be available for people who satisfy the exceptions to the abortion ban, which is a very small number of people, if any. So it's not available everywhere just because of the status quo ruling. It's only available when it's legal by state law.
And that's an important point. In a state like Wisconsin with an existing 1849 law on the books, this case doesn't affect that existing state law in any way. Do I have that right?
Right. So states can still, at this point in time, states are still allowed to ban abortion. And just because the pill is approved by the FDA doesn't mean that states can't ban abortion generally. And that's what we have in Wisconsin and 13 other states right now. And so in those states, this ruling doesn't change the status quo that even before this case, abortion was illegal. Same with this case.
We're talking to Drexel University law professor David Cohen about the current and future legal status of the abortion medication mifepristone following a U.S. Supreme Court decision on Friday saying it stays on the market while a lower court hears a lawsuit against the FDA over their approval of the drug. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Were you surprised by the original ruling in this case or the Supreme Court's action on Friday? Why or why not? What kind of access do you think people should have to mifepristone? Do you have questions about the drug or the legal battle surrounding it? Do you find this all confusing? I promise, if so, you're not alone. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with David Cohen, professor at Drexel University's Law School and author of the book Obstacle Course, The Everyday Struggle to Get an Abortion in America, looking at the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on the abortion medication mifepristone, what it means for the continuing legal fight over access to the drug. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to the Supreme Court saying, yes, this drug used in abortions does stay on the market, at least for now? What questions do you have about the future or present of the lawsuit against the FDA over approval of this medication? Join in with your thoughts, your reactions, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David, I want to talk a little bit about what's at stake. You've written about what people go through when they're seeking an abortion in the United States. Mifepristone, one of two drugs used in the United States. How important is medication abortion when it comes to abortion access? What do you see the potential impact if mifepristone were out of the equation?
At this point in time, the best data we have is that over half of the abortions in this country are done through medication. And that's a huge change over the past decade, decade and a half. And also in the past couple of years, abortion clinics have been allowed to mail pills to people. And so that means that people don't even have to go to a clinic to get an abortion. They can talk to a doctor or another medical care professional who's associated with an abortion clinic or a hospital, do all the counseling over the phone, and they can get their medical information, and then the pills can be mailed to them so they can have an abortion in the privacy of their own home. And people really seem to want that. I mean, just the numbers show that that is an appealing way for privacy reasons, but also for travel reasons. There are, you know, abortion clinics have been dwindling in this country for a long time. And so for a lot of people who live in states where there's a very small number of clinics, it takes a long time and a lot of resources to get to an abortion provider. And so because of abortion pills, people are able to get the pills by mail in states where it's legal and have an abortion in their home without having to travel. So what was at stake with this case was a method of abortion that is A, the most common, and B, really alleviates some of the problems with access that we've seen in this country with the closure of clinics, brick and mortar clinics, because people are able to get them by pills. And so that was the real threat here, that this was going after this common and accessible method of abortion. Now, it's not for everyone. Medication abortion is only up to about 10 or 11 weeks of pregnancy. And there are some complicating factors in people's medical histories that may not make them candidates for medication abortion. But for those for whom it works, it's a very accessible option.
Let's go back to our callers at 800-642-1234. Dale is with us in Mauston. Dale, hi.
Hi. Your guest had mentioned that mifepristone would be illegal in Wisconsin because of the state law we have regarding abortion. What if somebody wants to go out of state to get Mifepristone? Are they affected? So I have kind of a general question. How is the Wisconsin law? Can that be enforced on somebody when they want to leave the border?
I gotcha, Dale. I don't know if you, the connection wasn't great there, David, but the idea of if you're just, you got it? Okay, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the interesting and complicated questions after Roe v. Wade was overturned. When we had a baseline that abortion was legal everywhere, we didn't have to think of the types of questions that the caller raised, but now we do. So think of people in Wisconsin, right? They can drive south to Illinois, they can drive west to Minnesota and get pills or have a procedural abortion. And I think most people think that as long as you're traveling into a state and following those states, that state's laws, that you don't have to worry about your home state's laws. And that's how I think the American justice system should work. Unfortunately, it's less than clear that that's actually the rules under constitutional law. We don't really have many cases raising the question of whether a state like, say, Wisconsin can penalize one of its residents for going out of state to do something that's illegal in Wisconsin but legal elsewhere. And I think we are going to see states try to do this. I don't know if it's going to be a Wisconsin prosecutor who's going to try to do this or another state or a legislature passing a law. We did see Idaho just a few weeks ago pass a law saying that it's illegal to drive a minor to get an abortion in other states. And so I think this is going to be one of the questions we have to confront in the coming years. And it really raises some deep questions about what it means to be a country with 50 different states and different rules within each state, but also a country where people think they, you know, believe they have the right to travel. And so I think your callers really identified an important question. Currently, there are a lot of people who do exactly what the caller asked about, who go to other states to get abortions, and that has not been challenged yet. But the anti-abortion groups know this, and it's on their radar.
Thanks a lot for that call. Talking to David Cohen from Drexel University's Law School, looking at the U.S. Supreme Court action on the abortion, or a drug often used in abortion, Mifepristone. Now, David, a court of appeals prior to the Supreme Court ruling reached back to something called the Comstock Act from the 1870s. I'm seeing a lot of reporting on this. Have you been following this? Why is this popping up in this particular case?
The Comstock Act is something that a lot of people learned about in history classes because it was written in 1873, so it is literally 150 years old, by an anti-vice crusader who didn't want people getting birth control, didn't want them getting anything considered obscene. And the law says that it's illegal, it's a federal law that says it's illegal to mail anything that's considered obscene, to mail birth control, or to mail anything that can cause an abortion. And this was a very successful law for about 50 years in the late 1800s, early 1900s. A lot of people went to jail, but there was a lot of backlash. And in the 1920s, 1930s, it fell out of favor and the courts started interpreting it much more narrowly. The thing is, it was never taken off the books. The birth control part was taken off the books. And the obscenity part was considered unconstitutional as a First Amendment issue. But the abortion part is still there, but it's been ignored for 100 years. Now, the anti-abortion groups are saying, well, we've got this law in the books. It doesn't matter that it's from an era where women couldn't vote and didn't have representation. This law says it's illegal to mail anything that can cause an abortion. And so they are saying that abortion pills, which some people get through the mail, like I mentioned, shouldn't be allowed because people can mail them. But their argument really has no stopping point. It would also include banning any clinic from getting surgical supplies or medical instruments because those are through the mail or through FedEx or some comparable service. And so they're really pushing this argument as a way that they think to ban abortion nationwide, because if you can't send anything through the mail that can cause an abortion, then all abortion will shut down in this country. So it is really a big part of the strategy right now to end abortion.
Samantha from Whitehall couldn't stay on the line, but reminds us that Mifepristone is used for things other than abortion. She wonders what it would mean for people who use it for other purposes like miscarriages and some other conditions that are treated with mifepristone. If this were ruled illegal, what about people who use it for purposes other than abortion, David?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really excellent question because it's a really important part of miscarriage management in particular. And the issue is that the only thing the FDA has approved mifepristone for is abortion. Miscarriage management and other uses related to obstetric care are off-label uses. And that's totally legal, totally fine. There's a lot of off-label uses for drugs of all sorts. The problem is if the one approval goes away, if the approval for abortion goes away, then that drug could disappear completely, in which case it would not be available for these other uses. So this is a big part of this case, which is that not only would it cut off abortion medication, abortion care, it could also cut off some other forms of important obstetrical care and make people really suffer.
And briefly, David, remind us the timeline of what to watch for next in this case.
The next thing we're going to see is oral argument in the Fifth Circuit in mid-May. They can decide any time after that. I imagine it'll be relatively quick, a month or two, but I think it'll be back to the Supreme Court in the fall with a decision next year.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's David S. Cohen, professor at Drexel University's Thomas R. Klein School of Law. He's author of the book Obstacle Course, The Everyday Struggle to Get an Abortion in America. He's with us today for a look at the U.S. Supreme Court's decision on the abortion medication mifepristone, keeping it on the market for now, overturning a lower court stay on the medication. And we looked ahead to where the legal battle is expected to go next.